In her State of the Tribes address yesterday, Menominee Chair Lori Boveen highlighted positive collaboration between the state and the tribes, but also outlined the tribes' commonly held challenges and priorities. We'll talk about them this hour with a couple of guests. Good morning, I'm Cynthia Schuster, in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 7:07 on Friday, February 14th. Later in the hour, we'll talk with Mike Wiggins, chairman of the Bad River Band of Lake Superior, Chippewa. But first, we're joined by John Greendeer, president of the Ho-Chunk Nation of Wisconsin. You can join our conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. John Greendeer, thanks for being here today.
Good morning. Thank you.
If this address yesterday was to be the state of the tribes as a whole, how would you describe the state of the Ho-Chunk specifically?
Well, the Ho-Chunk has really evolved greatly since its inception of the Constitution in the mid-90s. And I believe that we continue a pretty progressive pace in terms of both of our business and our government hybrid structure. We have become not only a large employer, but a good employer. And I think we are great examples of collaboration, given the unique and distinct disenfranchised land base that we have, working with local, municipal, county, and state governments to stretch that dollar a little farther to help all of our communities. So I'm very proud of the Ho-Chunk Nation, and I'm proud of Indian Country, because I believe that we're all kind of working toward the same goal, and I think Chairwoman Boveen's speech kind of encapsulates that partnership that we have with our local governance. Mm-hmm.
What is the state's role in the tribe's well-being, in your opinion?
The state has a responsibility to ensure the safety and welfare of all its citizens, all its taxpayers, and we are taxpayers, and I know that often gets misinterpreted through political rhetoric, but you know, we certainly are not only taxpayers but also major contributors to our state's economy, and the state has to understand that that we are a very large player in our state in terms of tourism, of job employment, of great benefits. We're, you know, like I said, we are great employers, and so our communities are not just exclusively tribal communities. They are a mix of both. And I think that in order to be a good tribe, you have to embrace the community for which you reside in, and that includes everybody. So we are as well caretakers of all of the constituencies in our state.
What do you want to clarify? You mentioned that the taxpayer issue is something that becomes a political pawn. What do you want to clarify about that issue?
Well, often I think there's a distinction that some lawmakers and folks in the state make that, you know, this is good for the tribes and not good for the Wisconsin taxpayers. You know, a lot of that reinforcement of distinction takes place and permeates throughout our communities. And so we see that even at the elementary school level at the, you know, and we see this stereotype being reinforced often, that we don't pay taxes and we have free rides, and that's not the case, you know. And if that is true, then in order to make that claim that we don't, then the state's probably up to reimburse a lot of tribal people in the state. But there are a few exemptions that are offered to tribal people and tribal governments, but, you know, nothing that would actually be able to validate that taxpayer, non-taxpayer the moniker that we've been given by state lawmakers. Mm-hmm.
Yesterday, Lori Boveen also touched on poverty, unemployment, and poor access to health care. How extensive are these problems for the Ho-Chunk?
They are what make me come to work every day. We have in health care, she pointed out some statistics that, you know, really hit home, you know, in terms of our life expectancy, our diabetes rates, our obesity rates, and, you know, and access to good education and nutritional lifestyles that, you know, that you'll often find in impoverished communities. And, you know, she touched on a lot of things that are probably the ancillary byproducts of an impoverished community. When you talk about crime rates and social issues, you know, these are things that, you know, and I don't, you know, and I may be criticized for saying it, but these aren't things that just simply money fixes. You know, you can't throw money at this problem and walk away. There is, you know, when you get down to the core of it, we need to empower our tribal communities, our tribal people, you know, because we are dealing with, you know, this post-traumatic, you know, genocidal issue that goes on, and it still is insidious even within our younger generations of how, you know, we are trying to adapt and trying to and making our efforts to step up and be, you know, equals among our fellow Wisconsin citizens. And I think Chairwoman Boivin's kind of juxtapositions of tribal communities and non-tribal communities really epitomize where we are in terms of our health and social issues. So I think she did a very good job bringing that forward.
Mm-hmm. How exactly would you suggest empowering the tribal community, as you say?
I think, you know, the best direction is to first focus on our children. You know, we may not be able to fix the common man of today, but we certainly can provide that education, you know, for people to develop strong, healthy, and even economically healthy lifestyles for their future. And this means, you know, focusing on, you know, ensuring that we follow the gifts of our children, follow the things that they like to do, empower them to be strong leaders, to have strong role models. These are things, you know, and then building on toward entrepreneurship and you know, support for people that want to go out and do more, not only for their tribe, but for their community, for their family, for themselves. So these are things that I think that we can focus on in terms of breaking that cycle of poverty to empower communities.
We're talking with John Greendeer, president of the Ho-Chunk Nation of Wisconsin, and we're reflecting on yesterday's State of the Tribes address. We're wondering as well what you think of the State of the Tribes address and what the State of the Tribes is. Are you a member of one of Wisconsin's tribes? We'd love to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@WPR.org, and you can also find us on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Cynthia Schuster, in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about the State of the State address, which happened yesterday, and we have a couple of guests joining us this hour. Right now we're talking with John Greendeer, president of the Ho-Chunk Nation of Wisconsin, and we invite you to the conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@WPR.org. John Greendeer, Menominee Tribal Chair Lori Boivin did not specifically address the proposed casino for Kenosha. Your nation, along with the Forest County Potawatomi, has opposed the casino. Why is that?
Why didn't she mention it, or why are we opposed?
Why are you opposed to it? Yeah, sorry.
Well, a while back, when the after August of 2013, when the approval came forward for the Menominee Tribe, we were asked once again what our position was, knowing that the governor had set some criteria on having consensus among all 11 tribes. The Ho-Chunk Nation, its leaders, they took that question very seriously, and it wasn't something that we came out. And so what happened was we went out to our districts and we spoke with our people, our elders, our clan leaders, and we got a lot of history lessons, and we got a lot of, motivation to, you know, stand with a confident position that we would not allow any tribe to leapfrog over into, whether it be a gaming market, which really wasn't the main topic, but into what we call our traditional homelands, and that is the southern portion of Wisconsin, where we have a lot of history that is backed up by both cultural, linguistical, and archaeological evidence. But more importantly, that what happens over the course of breaking down this what we always known as our homeland, and allowing, you know, the southern half of Wisconsin to look like the northern half, you know. So we really, you know, have to look beyond the issue at hand and down to, as we always say, to our next generations. And, you know, this was kind of the prudential moment of whether or not, you know, we are going to, you know, redefine our homeland, under our watches or not. And so, we met with the Menominee and we expressed what our position was, and that has remained unchanged. And so, and I think that was it. And the governor had set some criteria and set a deadline. And then after that, in October 22nd, when the deadline came to be, the standard has changed. And so someone would have to really convince me that tribal consensus is at the table, which means he's given the keys to the Potawatomi and Ho-Chunk and said, if you guys turn these keys, this casino's happening. And I don't believe that to be true.
What is the importance of this issue in the grand scheme of tribal politics and economics?
Well, there's a great significance in terms of, this is a multi-billion-dollar tribe coming into the state. This, while Menominee has secured the federal approval for the land, it is the Seminole Tribe of Florida that are the developers, the branders, the funders, the marketers. This is a pretty large tribe coming into the state. Wisconsin's 12th tribe is going to be landing on us when this goes through, if it goes through. So it's very important. And I'm not ready to share the stage. So I think it's important to, consider what the long-term impacts are for those looking down the road. Yes, you see jobs, and yes, there's all that glitz, and no one can sell the benefits of gaming and what it can provide, and then Ho-Chunk Nation, but at the same token, you have to really look at what are the long-term effects, how it's going to affect intertribal, and all that we've built today. So it wasn't mentioned, and we expected it. As a matter of fact, at the end of January, we did see some media releases that, this would be an issue on at the State of the Tribes. And so certainly that's a, when you look forward to being uncomfortable, that would be it.
So were you surprised that she didn't bring it up?
Well, not really. Chairwoman Boivin is as you can see through the speech, not just diplomatic, but she's also very respectful and knows that there are issues that divide, and there always have been. And we don't want to manufacture the idea that this Kenosha Casino was the first thing ever that had tribes looking across the table, not in agreement. But I think she knows what the purpose of this privileged opportunity is that we have before our state lawmakers and our state citizens. And it's to show where we have issues that go across the board. And so I'm very happy that she respectfully delivered a speech very articulately, and she drove a lot of these issues home. And for that, I my gratitude goes, unlimited for her performance yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Do you think there's a compromise that's possible with regards to that proposed casino?
I'm not certain. I mean, if the end result is, the Seminole Casino coming here, I'm not sure there's a compromise coming forward. I don't know what's ahead, so you're asking me to speculate into a hypothetical. So that's a little tough to do. But certainly, do I want to see a Seminole Casino in our state? Probably not.
You talked about the importance of having presenting a united perspective during this opportunity to speak to the state legislators. Could you talk a little bit about how the tribes work with state lawmakers throughout the year, not just at this moment where they're speaking at the State of the Tribes address?
Absolutely. The relationships between the state and the state, first of all, we know we have discourse within our assembly, within our Senate. And as folks that work for tribes that work are sworn to their best interest, we need to make sure that when we go out there, it doesn't have a capital D or an R on there. It has things that help our communities, our tribal and non-tribal communities. And so what I've seen out there is a lot of genuine individuals who work in the state capitol, who really consider some of the needs in our tribal communities, who have put forward and demonstrated that by putting forward legislation. I don't think that there's a better example than the Special Committee on State and Tribal Relations, where we have successfully drafted bills that help Indian country, that really take a finer look and filtered and bring that through our political system, where the members on that board are the only members in the state government that have an actual vote on committee. And so, you know, I have a privilege of sitting there dialoguing. And it's not always, you know, easy issues. There are those uncomfortable and awkward situations where, you know, something may, you know, adversely impact your tribe, even though it overall helps. But, you know, the point is we get the opportunity to sit there and be a part of that. And so we have a lot of, you know, people that work in good faith, but we also have a lot of folks that are driven elsewhere, you know, and you know, without, you know, when you take a look at what has recently come through, ramrodding these frac sand and iron ore mining bills, not considering what tribes think, or not even taking that into consideration, when every single tribal government has told you, do not pass Act 250 because of its impact on our tribal children and all of our children, and how we reinforce race-based stereotypes in schools, please don't do this. And you sit there with a grin and you pull the trigger. You know, you can't honestly candy this up anyway, other than the fact that, you know, they're our friends as long as they agree with you, some of them. So, you know, it can get pretty volatile in some areas, but, you know, what we work toward are those good things, with those good partnerships where we see the genuine demonstrations of good faith, good governance, shared governance between the tribes and state lawmakers.
Speaking of that frac sand and iron ore mine issue, if all the tribes have this united front, this consensus that this is not something to be done, why not bring that up at the State of the Tribes address? I felt that was glaringly absent.
Well, yeah, I think, you know, one of the things that, you know, it might not be so big, but when you evaluate the State of the Tribes, your basis is what you expect out of it. And if you don't see that, you know, it's going to affect how you evaluate that. And certainly it depends on who you're going to have up there and what the issues are at hand. And I was expecting to see more, especially since the progression of mining since the last State of the Tribes address. But, you know, some people can bring this in a indirect way. You know, the some people think our environment is at stake during this. But if you look at it, it's actually our political process, our democracy, that's dying a miserable death in here. And that affects everything. This means that when you have issues that affect a region or area and you have meetings somewhere else, or you limit speech, or you don't allow people to exercise their right to demonstrate and to express their, you're losing that whole essence of what the fabric of America is built on. And for us to watch the democracy die alongside of the environment is a tragedy, and it's unacceptable. And you can't walk into that capital and think that you're serving the greater public when your interest is corporately driven. And so I think that has to be said, because, you know, this place, and I don't want to over-politicize this as a politician, but this is really based on our citizenry, on our state impact, on our abilities to participate in governance, and that got cleared off the table in order to move this legislation through. So I find that unacceptable. I have to.
What legislation are you hoping to see or not to see from the state in the coming year?
I think state lawmakers have to make an effort to repeal Act 250. I think that is a tremendous step backwards. I think upon reflection, years down the road, people that supported it have to lament a decision like that. You cannot use the word forward and progressive and pass legislation like that. And I really think the repeal of that, and something that's a little bit more progressive and a little more considerate of our citizenry is something that is needed. So, you know, there's that. There's also, you know, taking a look at what the byproducts of these environmental issues are. I drove to Madison last night from Black River Falls, and I drove through what I could only consider was Swiss cheese. Looking at the tremendous devastation the frac sand mining industry has done, not only to just our own scenic beauty, but to our own homes and our own communities, our own drinking water, places where we raise our families. You can't look at that and say, we're moving forward, we're progressing. And so we have to go back and take a check and see whether or not, if whatever it is we're doing is really moving the citizens of Wisconsin forward, or if it's, if we're just good for business. And that, you have to make that distinction there. We have to go back to the people on this one. And I really think people that you elect in office as election rules, find out if they're there for the people. Find out if, and it's hard, it might be hard to do through the thick filters of politicians, but find out who are genuinely there for the people, the people's welfare, the people's interests, so that we actually have, you know, state of the states that talk about the people and not about the state of the businesses. So, John, that's a long answer to a short question.
That's okay. John Greendeer, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
John Greendeer is president of the Ho-Chunk Nation of Wisconsin. After the news, we'll talk with Mike Wiggins, and we'll take your calls as well. 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234, talking about the state of the tribes. I'm Cynthia Schuster, in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. In her State of the Tribes address yesterday, Menominee Chair Lori Boivin spoke of a number of issues facing and affecting Wisconsin's tribes, from environment to education and even drugs and alcohol. We're talking more in depth about some of these issues with two guests this hour, and we're taking your calls as well at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@wpr.org, and you can also tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Mike Wiggins joins us now. He's chairman of the Bad River Band of Lake Superior, Chippewa. Mike Wiggins, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. My honor.
Thanks for being here. So what was your reaction, your response to the State of the State Tribe, or sorry, the State of the Tribes address yesterday afternoon?
I thought it was a real positive day. I thought Chairwoman Boivin's comments were really good. She covered a lot of ground. There wasn't a lot of fire and brimstone, and I think in some of the discussions and some of the issues that we've had this past year, you know, there's been definitely enough of that. And I think of Bad River and the mining issue, there's definitely going to be more of it in the future. So yesterday was a nice break to talk about a host of issues, but to do that without a lot of the tenor that has been occurring.
Sure, and I talked with John Greendeer about this before the news, but with regards to mining, you know, that didn't come up specifically during the address. Was that a missed opportunity?
No, I think if anything, it was the elephant in the room. We've definitely all been through it. She did talk about the environment and talked about the tribes as stewards of the earth, and how preservation in particular is critical, you know, for our tribal people. And we've been pushing that message on a lot of levels at the EPA, the Army Corps of Engineers. When you look at things like the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative, one of the things that's assumed there before anything is that there's got to be harm in order to support, restore, or rehabilitate. There's been damage. And what we've been saying, like in the example of the Bad River watershed up north, is there's a watershed that's exemplary. Don't destroy it and then allocate all these millions, hundreds of millions of dollars to repair it. Let's preserve this and value what we have in real time. And so I think some of the comments that Chairwoman Boivin made, you know, cut directly to that notion.
The Bad River Band was ordered by the EPA to bring sewage treatment facilities into compliance there. There have been several violations, and they have until June 30th now to update their standards. Some have criticized the tribe for using environmental reasons to oppose the mine because of the sewage treatment issue. Is that fair criticism, Chairman Wiggins?
No, it's not. But at the same time, we have an obligation to take care of our business, and that's exactly what we've been trying to do. Some of the things that happened, you know, in the early 2000s there, because of lack of money and not paying attention to the infrastructure, you know, with all of the other things that tribal governments have to try and do for their people, are haunting us. And so we're spending an incredible amount of money and a lot of administrative time, you know, trying to rectify the issues with our wastewater treatment plant. Why I say it ain't fair is essentially that that's a public service that every city, town, and municipality in the state of Wisconsin deals with. And there are lots of towns and municipalities that struggle with wastewater treatment issues and violations. The other thing is the Bad River Wastewater Treatment Facility is minute and tiny. It's a speck compared to some of these other wastewater treatment municipalities. As an example, we treat about 70,000 gallons on an average day. A small town next to us does about 1 million gallons a day. So we're minutia, but at the same time, I understand it's part of the effort to try and discredit Bad River's voice in the mining fight, to try and say essentially they have wastewater treatment issues, so we should be able to blow up the headwaters of their watershed. And it just doesn't really resonate with us. Mm-hmm. It's weak, and it's trying to compare apples and oranges, and you know, we recognize all of that. At the same time, we want to take care of our home, the river, the lake, and that's what we're working to do.
Well, the process for the mine appears to still be moving forward. Is the tribe still protesting, and are there other efforts underway to stop it?
Well, you have the Harvest Education Learning Project up in the hills. That's a direct action, scientific study, treaty rights-based effort. That's going strong. There was a nice fundraiser last night for that. And then on the legal side, the timelines for litigation on the bulk sampling phase, which is where we're at right now, has just been triggered. And our tribe will be, you know, reviewing whether or not we want to litigate and jump into the fray here in the bulk sampling portion of this whole process.
Mm-hmm. Lori Boivin highlighted a number of other issues as well, like economic isolation, which she says takes away from opportunities and creates poverty for the tribes, as well as drugs and alcohol and health care. How significant a concern are these issues, and how are tribal leaders keeping them on the lawmakers' radars?
Well, they're very significant issues. And I know for our tribe, and I would imagine the same goes for Red Cliff up north, We struggle economically, and right now, with propane being $5 a gallon and the fact that we've been locked down in a polar vortex since before Christmas, it's incredibly difficult financial times, and our enterprises are definitely feeling that. You know, the lack of population is part of the challenge that we deal with. It's also part of the attractiveness of our home in terms of the wilderness kind of features and the wildness of those places up in northern Wisconsin. How we're dealing with that is essentially trying to advocate at state and federal levels for and trying to develop the administrative capacity back home to work hand in hand. Sometimes those opportunities are minimized, you know, depending on the whims of legislatures and governors and stuff. But other times, you know, we find different ways to connect and try to meet the needs of our people. I think, you know, I know what Menominee's going through when they're trying to get that off-reservation casino. Those are game changers, and we can look at the Potawatomi and the Ho-Chunk and the wonderful benefit that, you know, their off-res gaming enterprises have had for their tribal communities. I can understand why Menominee would want to do that, because wherever you happen to be located, as they say in business, location, 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 that essentially is a limiting factor on revenue generation and your ability to meet the needs of people. So wanting to expand off-reservation is completely logical, and it is a game changer for that nation if they can do that.
What challenges does your tribe face up in the north where jobs are relatively scarce, and what solutions are you trying to achieve in that area?
Well, for us in particular, gaming has always been the backbone of our tribe and will be into the future for a while. One of the things that we do is we try to get efficient. You know, we've for years now have been operating on the mantras of generate revenue or save money, and it's getting our departments and programs efficient and also controlling spending. Some of that sounds so familiar to the state and federal kind of discussions on how administration goes, but it's absolutely true. Jet set program managers who want to travel all over, to that training in northern New Mexico in the dead of winter. You know, we analyze that stuff. Is that training really crucial? So there's a lot of minutia that's looked at to try and save money, but at the same time, we have a wireless communications company that we're developing superior connections. We have 101 miles of fiber optic broadband that we negotiated for and got ownership of from Marquette, Michigan to Duluth, Minnesota, that we want to build and utilize to bring high-speed connectivity across the UP and to some of the rural northern towns. We also are working on local living economies and sustainable economic development. In the future, we hope to take advantage of things like aquaponics and hydroponics and different farm systems, not too unlike the Oneida tribe and some of the really good work that Dan Cornelius has done there.
We're talking with Mike Wiggins. He's chairman of the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Chippewa, and we're reflecting on yesterday's State of the Tribes address. What are your thoughts, your questions? Are you a member of one of Wisconsin's tribes? We would love to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@wpr.org, and you can tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. I'm Cynthia Schuster, in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about the state of the tribes in the state of Wisconsin with Mike Wiggins. He's president of the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Chippewa, and we're taking your calls at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. Chairman Wiggins, Lori Boivin also mentioned in yesterday's address, she called for greater education about the state's native tribes, its history and culture. What would you like schools to teach about the Bad River Band?
Well, I think when we look at education, one of the things that's there as a framework is Act 31, in that Act 31 puts forth minimum requirements for some of the basics on tribes all over the state in certain grades, like second grade, fourth grade, sixth grade, eighth grade. I think if we saw some integrity and a robust approach to Act 31, I really believe that we would see payoffs in the future. Payoffs in the form of, not money, but in the form of cooperation, in the form of understanding, compassion, working together mutually on different pieces of legislation that would help all people. On some of this stuff, if it helped the tribes, a rising tide raises all boats. On some of this other stuff, if it helps the tribes and other local communities, for us up there in the Northland, we truly are trying to carve out a living. There are opportunities, and there are things that could be done right now. I mean, the whole notion of sustainable economic development and local living economy is being driven up there by local mayors, and we're a part of that. It would be awesome if the state of Wisconsin and some of that surplus money came to visit up there to help facilitate and promote some of those types of ideas. But Act 31 is the framework that's already in the school systems and has the capacity to really teach kids some of the basics about all tribes, from treaty rights to the notions of sovereignty to some unique differences between the tribes. That would be a great start.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's evident that Lori Boivin does not see much compassion in the way of the mascot bill that had been passed in the state legislature. I'm wondering if more investment were made in things like Act 31, if you would see a difference among the children of the state or in our culture with regards to Indian mascots.
I would like to think so. At the same time, I think on a level of humanity, the mascot issue is so difficult because with or without treatment education of natives and this and that, on a level of humanity, that seems to be a no-brainer, that you probably shouldn't encourage and generally should not be a good idea to be able to do caricatures of a certain race of people. What's really, really difficult about the mascot issue is that was settled law, that was essentially something that had been dealt with and a law had been passed to essentially make that illegal and to bring school districts in line and to help them find new mascots. When that was reintroduced and that legislation took hold and they repealed the mascot bill and put in place the one that allows school districts to use natives again, in my mind, that was like going into settled law, which was essentially the equivalent of going into the cemetery and digging up a corpse. And when I think about the fact that these are men with rationality and logic and conscious endeavor, that they spent the energy and time to go essentially undo and unwrap what was a good thing and what was already settled and bring that back into the light of day and then undo everything to the demise of, you know, of our children, because that's what this is about. That's an incredibly, incredibly difficult issue to really have any faith in or to talk about. This is about Indian children. This is about all children and how they treat each other. And the messages that the mascot bill sends, absolutely sickening.
We have a number of people waiting to talk to you, so let's go to Mike in Green Bay. Mike, what's your question?
Hi, this is Mike Johnson from Green Bay. I was born and raised in Hurley, lived there all my life, and 2 years ago I had to move away because there's nowhere to work. And what I want to remind Mr. Wiggins is that they're allowed to stay up there and live up there irregardless of what industry moves to the area. Where the rest of us, we need industry in the area, we need jobs. I would love to move back to Hurley, but I just can't. I can't afford it. And so going forward, I'd really like to hear him acknowledge that, you know what, they're in a little different situation. Whether this mine comes or whether whatever industry comes up here, it does not affect their ability to stay up here and enjoy the Northland. And I'll take my answer off here.
Mike Wiggins?
It does affect our ability to live here. I mean, we're struggling right with Mr. Johnson there, and poverty is hitting hard in the Bad River community. It's a reluctance to destroy and explode our home as a means to provide a decade or so of mining activity. I would say to Mr. Johnson, let's look at the big picture in reality and drop our human constructs for a moment and pretend, as an example, that the Michigan-Wisconsin border is not there. Nature wouldn't acknowledge that man-made construct. Well, up in the Hurley-Ironwood area, what do we have? We have Orvana over in Michigan, about 50 miles away, firing up. Eventually, they'll be able to mine underneath the bed of Lake Superior, and they've talked about that. We have the White Pine Mine and the same group, the Klein Group, and all of its affiliates, purchasing the White Pine Mine and looking to fire up that sulfide copper mine there. We also have a mining company exploring just north of Ironwood Hurley, right up between Ironwood and the lake there. I think I see it on tap, 175 core sample drillings. There's going to be three active mines right there within a 60-70-mile radius of Ironwood Hurley. If they truly represent the manna from heaven that Mr. Johnson thinks is coming, there should be more than enough surplus to go around as far as jobs and money. What I found interesting is yesterday I heard Senator Fitzgerald talking about how Wisconsin is currently standing taller than Minnesota and Illinois. And one of my comments to him was, of Wisconsin standing taller. How can that be? We have no mines in Wisconsin. Minnesota has a full-fledged iron mining district with multiple iron ore mines going that all represent this essentially manna from heaven and jobs. It was a difficult answer for him, and one of the things that really surprised me was he indicated he did vote for the mining moratorium years ago, and we had some conversation on that. But at the same time, I just want to say we choose to live in our home. It's culturally and ancestrally connected. Some of our people do move to Green Bay. Some of our people do move across the nation to lead other lives and to live in other ways. For those of us that feel connected and want to stay by that big lake, exploding our home, exploding and degrading our water resources and our groundwater aquifers where we drink from is not part of our plan of economic stability and having a solid economic foundation for the next 200, 300, 400 years.
Let's talk to Nina in Trempealeau. Nina, what's your question or comment?
Well, first I'd like to thank the tribes for spearheading the opposition to the changes in the mining law. These changes hurt everybody. I'm not a member of the tribe. I'm just someone who loves nature, and I moved up here from Illinois because in Illinois it's just a bunch of fields and towns, and I wanted to live in this beautiful state. It's not fair to ruin the land and ruin the water so just a few people can profit for a short time when nature is endlessly productive, and the people who live up there have depended on the rice beds and the beauty to bring the tourists, and all this will be destroyed if we just, you know, like he said, if we make Swiss cheese out of what's there.
Thanks, Nina. Mike Wiggins, I don't suppose you would disagree with that.
Well, no, I mean we're looking at jobs and things that will sustain, you know, sustain us into the future. I mean, it may sound kind of crazy at first to talk about unleashing a small business that would eventually seek to tap 20,000 maple trees. If we wanted to tap 50,000 maple trees and produce hundreds of thousands of gallons of maple syrup and sugar for the free market, we have that option up north to do that right now. Collectively as a region, if we wanted to surpass Vermont as the number one maple syrup provider, we could do that right now. It's and in that process of harvesting and processing and marketing and sales and everything else, there are real jobs and there are lifestyles and healthy outcomes that would go with that. That's just one little bitty smidgen of an example of things that are out there and that are essentially provided to us by the ecosystems and landscapes around us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, looking at what's going on around the world, West Virginia, rivers being polluted and hundreds of thousands without water, and the videos I've seen online where folks are lighting their tap water on fire because of fracking and things like that.
Well, Mike,
the days of fear-mongering, I think, are over. This stuff is real, and it's hitting people in their homes.
Mike Wiggins, thank you so much for joining us this hour.
Thank you, ma'am.
Mike Wiggins is chairman of the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Chippewa. Thanks to Christy Taylor for producing the hour and for directing it as well. Robin Cherry for on-air production. I'm Cynthia Schuster, in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network.